Case number 12-5254, United States of America v. Regenerative Sciences, LLC, a corporation et al., appellants. Mr. Edelman for the appellants, Ms. Wright for the appellee.
I just want to alert the parties that there's one line of questions that I may ask that involves the sealed record. And when we get to that point, and I'll leave that for the end, we'll clear the courtroom for that. But
thank you, Your Honor. Okay. May it please the court. My name is Andrew Edelman. I represent the appellants in this matter. I've reserved 2 minutes for rebuttal. The court should reverse the district court's decision because it was demonstrably erroneous on every issue it confronted, both in terms of the holdings themselves and the manner by which it arrived at them. At issue in this case is the FDA's authority to regulate an autologous stem cell procedure, which is called the cultured Regenex procedure. And the procedure involves the use of the patient's own cells to treat the patient's injuries. It's our position, it was our position below, and it remains our position here, that the cultured Regenex procedure constitutes the practice of medicine. In support of our position, we submitted to the district court, and we submitted here, Colorado State statute, evidence of a Colorado State audit, the testimony of multiple witnesses, as well as third-party reports like the Belmont report, all of which substantiated that the cultured Regenex procedure constitutes the practice of medicine.
Well, why can't it be that it's the practice of medicine that uses a drug? If it's the practice of medicine that uses a drug, there's nothing that keeps it from being regulated by federal authorities, right?
Well, Judge, the issue is that the procedure involves the patient's own cells to heal the patient.
But if we found that there was a drug involved here and that a component of it traveled in interstate commerce, that they can clearly regulate, right?
Well, I wouldn't agree with that, Your Honor.
What part of it wouldn't you?
Well, let's go to the interstate commerce aspect. The government's position on the interstate commerce issue is derived from two cases, from the Baker case and the Dianovan case. The Baker case involved the manufacture of synthetic heroin. The Dianovan case involved the manufacture of a vitamin K for injection. In neither of those cases was a defense that the defendants were engaged in the practice of medicine.
So is your argument that if you're under the cloak of the practice of medicine, the fact that there may be a drug that's used, a component of which traveled in interstate commerce, is not germane to the analysis?
Your Honor, the problem with that analysis is
that we do that all the time. I think practice of medicine in that sense is regulated all the time because of the use of drugs.
Well, what is and is not the practice of medicine is a state term. It's regulated by the states. And in this case, we clearly have the practice of medicine as that term is defined and regulated in the state of Colorado covering this procedure. And we have the district judge below and the FDA in their complaint.
And all I'm saying is if we agree with you on that, that doesn't end the inquiry whether there's appropriate regulation here for the use of a drug in the practice of medicine or your use of a biological product.
Your Honor, if we follow the government's position, which is a follow-on of the Baker case and the Dianovan case, it gives the FDA limitless authority to regulate the practice of medicine. Because every medical practice, every surgery, everything that happens between a doctor and a patient, no matter where it happens in the United States, is going to inevitably involve, whether it's a bed or some other product that's used in the procedure, something that came from another state or maybe was imported from another country. That doesn't necessarily render
the agency isn't regulating beds.
I'm sorry?
The agency's not regulating beds. Well, that's not the question. Talking about regulation of drugs.
Well, again, all of those procedures are going to use some sort of an FDA-regulated medical device or a drug that comes in from another state. And it does not give the FDA the authority to regulate that doctor's office or to regulate that hospital.
It does give them the authority to regulate the drug.
Of course. And there's no question that in that case the FDA would have the authority to regulate the drug.
Right. But, just like in this case.
Well, in this case, the drug that's at issue, the one that came from out of state, is the doxycycline. And all that is an FDA-cleared antibiotic that's used to prevent swelling at the injection site when the procedure takes place.
It's an integral part of the procedure, though, right?
No,
you don't need to use it. Then why?
No, it's a safety mechanism to make sure that there's no swelling at the injection site. It's an antibiotic. Mm-hmm. The only thing that's an essential part of the procedure is the doctor's hands, the doctor's relationship with the patient, and the patient's cells. Dr. Centeno and the other defendants here, they could do this procedure without using a doxycycline. It's not necessarily the best way to do it, but the way that we've described it in the case below and here is that using the antibiotic is consistent with good medical practices. And that's why it's done.
Can I ask you this question? So let's assume that we take the constitutional veneer that you want to inject into it out of play and just look at the words of the statute and understand your processes. Are you making the claim that under the words of the statute, the definition of drug and biological product, that you don't fit within that, even if you take out of the field of vision any constitutional dimension?
Well, I'm just going to, Your Honor, it's a little bit confusing regarding what here has been defined as being the drug. In Judge Collier's decision, it says at page 2 that the procedure is a drug. That makes no sense.
I guess I'm talking about whatever it is that's in the syringe that then gets reinserted.
But
so that's a product.
Okay, that's a fair question. It's hard to respond to that question without raising the constitutional/federalism issues that are at play here. Because in theory, the FTC tried to do this very thing by regulating lawyers and law firms as financial institutions. And in theory,
it may be hard to imagine that world, which I'm just asking you to imagine that world anyway. Just suppose that I want your answer on, if you take out of the field of vision the constitutional dimension, are you making the argument that this product, which is the thing in the syringe, doesn't qualify as a drug or a biological product?
I'm not even conceding that it's a product, Your Honor. And that's a
this article. This there's something in the syringe.
There's something in the syringe.
Okay, I don't mean to attach any talismanic significance to the term product. The thing that's in the syringe.
Correct.
You would concede it's a thing.
Your Honor, I would concede that those two definitional statutes are broad enough to ensnare what is that thing, whatever it is. We'll concede that. But what we do not concede is that is the end of the inquiry. Mm-hmm. This court has been very explicit over time that in evaluating questions of this nature, especially when the government is trying to legislate or regulate in an area that's been left to the states to regulate, we have to look far beyond just a definitional statute. We see that in Gonzalez versus Oregon. We see it in ABA versus FTC, FDA versus Brown and Williamson, where the definition of medical device was clearly broad enough to ensnare a cigarette as being a drug delivery device, but we had to look beyond just what was contained in that definitional statute. And that's what we're calling for here. Judge Collier looked no further than two definitional statutes, even though the federalism issues in this case were screaming. They were screaming.
You have another argument, I think, which is that even if it fits within that terminology, that it nonetheless is subject to a more relaxed form of scrutiny because it fits within the 1271 regime.
Oh, well, that's a whole separate subject, Your Honor, and I'm concerned that I'm running out of time here. But I'm happy to address it. The issue of minimal manipulation here is a critical one. Perhaps at the most superficial level, that may be the most critical issue because the judge ruled that this procedure involved a more than minimal manipulation of cells without referencing any of our witnesses, any of our facts, or even acknowledging in the opinion that we had submitted that. So even from a base Rule 56 issue, we believe that that was a fundamental error, and we believe that there's nothing from this court's jurisprudence or the Supreme Court's that says that in an agency enforcement action that Rule 56 is somehow thrown out of the window. This, what happened below was not a search for a tribal issue of fact. Judge Collier leaped from a place where the defendants admitted that there were multiple steps involved in the procedure to one where all of a sudden that constitutes the more than minimal manipulation of the cells because there was a change in the relevant biological characteristics. We have no bridge to connect those two places, and this doesn't even get to the fact that we had attacked that position or the definition of more than minimal manipulation as being an unlawful rulemaking, as being arbitrary and capricious, as being improperly vague.
Why did you want to attack it? I mean, it seems you're trying to get the benefit of it, and I can understand why you'd want to get the benefit of it. It seems odd to try to attack the very thing that you're trying to benefit from.
Well, we're not necessarily trying to get the benefit of it. Again, our position is that we're engaged in the practice of medicine, and we're not regulated by federal law because Congress has not explicitly stated in either the Public Health Service Act or anywhere else that the FDA gets to regulate the practice.
Okay, what's your alternative argument? If we don't agree with you on that
the minimal manipulation standard is unlawful, and the way that it's been implemented here was an unlawful rulemaking, and this is something that was addressed in the first argument today. The rub of the minimal manipulation issue is FDA saying in a preamble statement that we don't believe that culture expansion constitutes minimal manipulation, and in theory, if it's included in a preamble statement, maybe it's not going to be a legislative rule. But the day that the FDA actually includes that statement in its complaint against the defendants, then it becomes clear that there are legal consequences that follow that statement. And that's clearly what happened here. It's not just the fact that there was a preamble statement that said the FDA's position. It was the fact that they actually applied it to the defendants in their lawsuit in this case. And then the district judge didn't allow us to challenge it as being an unlawful rulemaking because she said it wasn't ripe. That puts us in an impossible position to defend. And ultimately what happened on the minimal manipulation issue is that the judge simply deferred to the agency on a litigation position because the issue of the many steps had never arisen before. The judge deferred to the agency on that and said that when the FDA said in its preamble statement that they didn't believe that that culture expansion constituted minimal manipulation, it wasn't final. It was per se not final because this court had said in another unrelated case that if it comes up in a preamble statement, it's not final, and also because FDA has a regulation saying that its preamble statements are not final. It cuts against volumes of this court's jurisprudence on that issue. I'm way over my time.
We'll give you some time back. Is right?
Good morning. Abby Wright on behalf of FDA. I'd like to begin with looking at the statutory definition of drug, which is an article intended for use in the diagnosis, mitigation, treatment, or prevention of disease. And I think opposing counsel has here conceded that their product that they inject into the patient's knee is, in fact, an article used in the mitigation. They make health claims about that, and it's an article. So they are required because of the FDA regulates the manufacture of drugs, so they're required to manufacture their drug using good manufacturing practices and to properly label their drug. They've conceded that they don't do those things, and so the district court correctly entered summary judgment in favor of the government. I think there were questions about the minimal manipulation point, so I could turn to that. The district court focused on, I think correctly, the fact that defendants here have admitted that what they are trying to do is to alter the characteristics of these cells. So when they remove that fluid from the bone marrow, they pull out, I think it's about 100 million cells. Almost all of those cells die immediately. What they're trying to do is to culture what they claim are mesenchymal stem cells. And so they mix that with growth factors, enzymes, other drugs to create their product. What they're doing is going from a very heterogeneous population of 100 million cells, all different kinds of cells, they're changing the characteristics of those cells in the sense that now we have more mesenchymal stem cells, and the stem cells themselves have changed the genes and the proteins they express. And that's what our experts set forth in their declarations.
Can, can, So can I ask you sort of a framework question just to help me to understand how Part 1271 comes in? What's the authority to carve out the exemption that exists in Part 1271? As I look at it, so these regulations are issued pursuant to 42 U.S.C. 264A, and those give the FDA authority to issue regs to prevent the spread of communicable disease. So how do we get from there to the...
So FDA talks about this in the preamble to the rule and says that for a subset of cell and tissue products that are only minimally manipulated, the appropriate regulation of that is to focus on communicable diseases. So the 1271 regulations impose donor eligibility screening requirements, and they impose good tissue practices. And good tissue practices are somewhat similar to the manufacturing practices, although they don't focus on the potency.
I guess I'm missing the connection between that and communicable diseases.
So when the tissues are handled, any cell or tissue that comes from the human body obviously carries a risk that it will have disease. And so those in the handling of those tissue and cell products, the workers handling them and then anyone else treated in that same facility, for example, would be at risk for, if say the donor had hepatitis, that hepatitis could be spread to either a worker or another patient. And so the 1271 tissue practices really focus on controlling the possibilities of the spread of communicable disease.
On the 1271 question, do you take issue with the ability of this article thing to meet all the criteria except minimal manipulation?
The only basis on which FDA charged in the complaint was the minimal manipulation issue. There are other requirements, Your Honor, as notice of the homologous use, et cetera. We haven't taken a position here on whether minimal manipulation is the only thing. That's what was charged by FDA in this enforcement action.
But did you make an argument below, I guess, that any of the other criteria for 1271 were not satisfied?
No, we argued only the minimal manipulation point, Your Honor.
Okay. And on minimal manipulation, can you just explain in kind of layperson's terms?
I can try.
Part of what you said out earlier was the selection out of a certain type of cell.
Yeah.
The selection of a certain type of cell, at least under the Federal Register entry, selective removal of T cells, B cells, mm-hmm. red blood cells, sounds like that wouldn't take it out of minimal manipulation.
That selection, so the culture and expansion is different from selection. A selection might be an actual, you've got a mix of cells and you're pulling out certain cells to use. Here we're actually taking that group of cells, we're killing off almost all of them. The ones that, as Dr. Bauer explains in his declaration, the ones that survive have adapted to survive. And then the culture is to try to get those cells to multiply. We know from...
Does multiplication alone mean more than... If you're only multiplying the thing that already exists, so you're not creating a new thing, you're just creating more of the thing that's already there.
FDA has explained that it's a case-by-case determination, so it's not a per se rule that culture itself would constitute more than minimal manipulation in every case. What I was going to say is that the science shows that if you culture and expand stem cells for long enough, they can begin to exhibit cancer-causing and tumor-causing properties. And so that's part of the concern here. I think defendants will disagree as to how long they're culturing and whether they reach that point. But my point only is that minimal manipulation captures both the potential for contamination in the sense that you're handling, you're adding more products, there's just more and more opportunities for contamination. Also the fact that the stem cells themselves may change to exhibit some dangerous properties themselves. So there's kind of two trajectories of concern there, I think.
What does the word relevant mean in the regulation when it talks about relevant biological characteristics of cells or tissues?
I think it's,
I don't recall seeing much emphasis on that in the brief.
I think relevant to the what the cells are going to be used for, and that's relevant here. They claim that some cells will do certain, that what they inject will have certain sort of regenerative, I guess, properties, can repair injuries, et cetera. And so it's relevant to that use. So it's relevant in the sense that they are now trying to get culture and expand stem cells to be used in their products.
So what were the relevant biological characteristics of the cells or tissues here that were more than minimally manipulated?
So the minimal manipulation goes to the change in those characteristics.
Right.
So it's Dr. Bauer talks about, let me see where that... I think it's around 1215 in the second Bauer, so JA 1215, talks about how these stem cells how the stem cells themselves change and how, of course, that cell population changes. And those are the characteristics of the genes and the proteins they express. And I point you to the joint appendix because, of course, Dr. Bauer can set it out better than I can here. The other thing I think Your Honor wanted to discuss maybe in the sealed session, but there is another product they sometimes use that goes to minimal manipulation as well. If there are no further questions, we would ask that the district court be affirmed.
Okay. We'll let your opposing counsel give 2 minutes for reply, and then after that, we'll clear the court and ask another line of questions from the sealed appendix.
Thank you, Your Honor. I guess the most critical point that I would like to point out that wasn't raised during the previous discussion was where the authority for the 1271 regulations comes from. That authority comes from 42 U.S.C. Section 264A, which provides that the FDA has the authority to write regulations to prevent the introduction, transmission, or spread of communicable diseases from foreign countries into the states or possessions, or from one state or possession into any other state or possession. There's no issue and no discussion below regarding this, the interstate spread of communicable diseases or any sort of communicable diseases coming in from out of the country. I think it's noteworthy also that that statute, 42 U.S.C. Section 264, finds itself in 42 U.S.C. Part G, which is the a portion of the Public Health Service Act called Quarantine and Inspection. And that statute, the one after it, Section 265, suspension of entries and imports from designated places to prevent spread of communicable diseases. And then 266 is special quarantine powers in time of war. 267 is quarantine stations, grounds, and anchorages. And you have this statutory authority being used to regulate a procedure where my stem cells are being returned to me. And then elsewhere in Part 1271, we have the FDA saying that with autologous procedures, there's a minimal risk of spreading communicable diseases. And therefore, at 1271.90, it provides that patients such as myself who are going to be the beneficiary of such a procedure requires no communicable disease testing before I go in. Those two parts are irreconcilable. I can't have the authority going to the FDA to regulate the spread of communicable diseases in between states or from out of the country into the United States, and then within that regulatory chapter say that the risk is minimal and therefore I as the patient don't need to undergo communicable disease testing. Those two points are not reconcilable, and it shows that the entire chapter of regulations as we attacked in our counterclaim are either ultra vires, arbitrary and capricious, or some combination of the two.